Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center. The caregivers of San Juan Regional Medical Center are committed to bettering the quality of life, health, and care of individuals, families, and our communities. Life is their sacred trust. Better is their mission. Here is their home. San Juan Regional Medical Center. Improving the health of the Four Corners since 1910. Well, let me introduce my guests this morning who are joining me today. Back for his regular visit with me is Paul Reed from Archaeology Southwest, who also works with Salmon Ruins from time to time. Paul is joining us remotely from his home in the Taos area. Paul, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Scott. So glad to be back on with you.
You bet. Great to have you here. Thank you. Thank you very much. And also joining us this morning is another guest that Paul has helped to schedule with us this morning, and that is Tara Freedom, who's joining us from her home in Washington State. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thank you for being with us as well. We really appreciate that. And so, Paul, give me a little bit of the story about how you and Tara met.
Right. So, as you know, I post a lot of things in the Chaco world, and Estara had sort of mapped onto one that I did a few years ago. And so we talked a little bit about that. And then a couple years ago, she was in the Abiquiu area and kind of reconnecting with her Jinizaro roots and wanted to go see a site. So we were able to schedule a site visit. Went out and looked at the site at Las Casitas, which turns out to be one of her ancestral family homes. So, it was really amazing. And, you know, this is talked about a little. Estara talks about this in the blog. Archaeologists had worked at this site in the late 1950s when some work was being done at a nearby site. That's a Tewa site called Sapawe. And so anyway, there was some work done, and the archaeologists had wondered about who might have lived at this particular residence in the early 1800s through the mid to late 1800s. And anyway, so it was just really cool to then meet Estara as a descendant of the folks who had created this homestead, you know, a couple hundred years ago, and really connect that. So as you know, Scott, that I, you know, a lot of the work I do is with descendant communities from different places, and having that ancestral connection was just, you know, really, really wonderful.
Right. Very true. Well, Estara, let me bring you into the conversation and talk a little bit about this search for more about your family, your roots and your ancestors and things along that line. You grew up here in the Four Corners area, right? So this is some place that you're familiar with. And so talk to me a little bit about your search and how you and Paul connected, as he was talking about.
Yeah, I spent the first part of my life in the Four Corners area, and then we moved to Northern California, so it was very different. I have to say, though, being a child in Bears Ears in Moab was really incredible. It was a different time back in the 70s, and as a child, we could kind of roam free and experience the nature there in a different way, I think, than is available now to kids.
Right.
And it was very formative for me in a visceral way, a very physical way, to be there. My dad was really in love with nature, and he knew all these sites, like in Bears Ears, these places we would go that were off trail, indigenous sites. There would be sometimes like a cave up high on a cliff with, you know, like smoke and fire marks coming out of it, and maybe a rope or a, you know, hemp ladder coming down maybe like 200 feet straight down the cliff wall. So they were, trips that were always filled with wonder at what and how people lived and how they got there.
Right. And it sounds like your dad maybe knew the places to go to or what to show you as a child growing up, right? To give you a little bit of that experience.
He did. He loved nature. He loved being in the desert. He loved being isolated. And he did land surveying at some point. So he just knew all these places. And he would scope things out and then he would bring us there as kids.
Right. But you started thinking about your ancestry, and that brought you back to kind of northern New Mexico, though. This we're talking, I think, in the Abiquiu area, correct?
Yes, that's true. I was there on a visit to my in-laws actually, and who had moved to Abiquiu, my brother-in-law, and we were just there having dinner one night, and I wasn't really thinking about it, and then I picked up these books and started looking at it and seeing family names, and it just kind of dawned on me that I needed to do some further investigation.
And Paul Reed, talk to me a little bit about, how this work kind of, again, corresponds with what we talk about, you and I, on this program on a fairly regular basis as well, about these ancestral peoples that lived and worked and were in this area and for generations, and kind of tracing their movements and the links to modern day.
Right. I mean, I think this particular story is really fascinating in that regard because, the Jenízaro people are people who are, defined in different ways, but basically from different tribal groups, many of whom were taken as captives in the raiding that happened in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries in New Mexico. And then folks were resettled in different areas. So at Abiquiu, there was a land grant that was created through the Spanish Crown, and Jenízaro people with different tribal backgrounds and some Spanish connections too were resettled there. And so this group of people is something that really is hardly taught at all. So, and as I went through graduate and undergraduate quite a while ago, and there was basically this is a side of New Mexico history that is scarcely covered. The good news is, in the last decade or so, many folks have gotten interested. So there's been different books that have been put out. There's been a discussion of enslaved peoples tied to the Jenízaro experience. There's a recent film that's come out. So there's really been a whole lot of attention lately. So I think what this experience has kind of taught me with the different work that I do with the Senate communities is that, there are many untold stories that we don't have because we tend to learn sort of the broad outlines of history in different places. But in Abiquiu specifically, in the town of Belen, south of Albuquerque, Carnuel, up in the East Mountains, there's a number of different sort of specifically created Jenízaro communities, that came about when the Spanish were still in control, and then those passed through the Mexican period into the American period. And people have very deep roots in these communities. So being able to meet Estara and see this place with her and connect is again just a huge part of what I think is most important at this point, what we're doing in archaeological studies and cultural studies. So it's hard to kind of put that importance into words, but for me, it's been a big learning curve to just really try to come up to speed on the experiences of this Jenízaro, these different groups of people.
Right, very true. And Estara, for your efforts to kind of trace back your family history a little bit and some of these settlements, was there stories passed down in your family to you, or is this all new information that you are learning about from your work?
It's mostly new information. Very little was actually passed down and known. I've been able to spend some time with my mom recently, and I've been taking video of her telling stories and getting to know a little bit more about what she knows and remembers. However, both my parents are from Southern Colorado, and she's back in the Colorado area, and she was really cut off from her roots in New Mexico, and as well as family and ancestors there. But
Right.
she didn't know a lot.
Sure. And of course, what this era that Paul is talking about, and you too, it goes back several even more generations, right, than just your parents, obviously, right? So we're going back even further, and so some of those stories may not have been passed down, or maybe the family didn't want to pass those stories down. I'm not sure which one it was, but to rediscover that has got to be really fascinating and interesting, and to be able to share that with someone like Paul Reed, who can also provide some insights maybe and help in the work that he does. How has that been for you?
Oh, it's been incredible. And it's a real joy to be able to share a lot of this with my mom and my family as well. But being able to go to the site at La Casitas with Paul Reed was really life-changing in many ways, and being able to discuss the historical aspect of what's going on there.
Right, we're showing a photo from your blog post about the what the ruins looks like from La Casitas, a village founded by your ancestors, it says, in the early 1800s.
Correct.
And that was something you hadn't known before you started this research.
Yes, that's true. I had been researching for quite a while before I was even aware of La Casitas, and the first inkling and idea I had about Las Casitas was from some papers that my mom had sent from a relative who had written down names of her mom and her mom's siblings and their spouses and their children and some of their parents. And it was in these handwritten notes that I saw that they were residing at a place called La Casita, and then in near El Rito. So I looked up La Casita and El Rito, and that's when I got a hold of a couple of pages basically on La Casitas. And then I saw that it was an archaeological site and there really wasn't much there. And I felt a little bit disappointed, but that's when I reached out to Paul to find out what he knew, being that it's an archaeological site.
Right. And Paul, were you able to fill in some of the blanks, I guess, from your work at Las Casitas and that of your colleagues?
Well, right. I mean, it wasn't any work that I had done, Scott, but it was really interesting sort of synchronicity because there was a little conference that was held at El Rito in 2018 that some folks had put together, and it was focused on both the Tewa site at Sapawe, which is one of the largest sites really in the area that is an ancestral Tewa site, and then populations migrated and moved down to Okeawingue, Santa Clara, San Ildefonso, and other places. So the focus was on the Tewa site in part and some discussion of that. And we had a gentleman known as called Ben Chavarria, who is the Santa Clara Pueblo Tribal Historic Preservation Officer, and we did a little forum and talked about that. But the other side of the conference was this focus on Las Casitas and the historic settlement there. And so this was in 2018, and then in 2021, Astara contacted me and we started talking about the site. So these were two totally unrelated events that sort of came together. So yeah, that makes it particularly interesting. And then a colleague and friend of mine for many years, David Snow, who's an archaeologist, had kind of looked back into this because, again, the site had been excavated way back in 1959. And there hadn't been a whole lot done. There's an artifact collection that's in Santa Fe at the Museum of New Mexico, but not a whole lot of work on that. So Dave Snow got interested in it and did a little research and was trying to connect up names, and actually had listed names in a document that didn't end up getting published, but it had a lot of the ancestral names that are in Astara's extended family, like her great grandparents and great great grandparents even. So yeah, it was just this is again one of those sort of epic moments where you can connect a living descended person to an historic place on the landscape, and then sort of have all, just all the interesting revelations and discoveries flowing from that.
Right, very true. And so, Istar, as you start putting these pieces kind of together and share these this information with your family, your extended family, and what are the responses that you're getting from them? Are they mostly interested in learning about the history of the family, or what kind of reactions are you getting?
They're interested in learning about the family, although it's really my quest. So I can relay information that I learn and is topical, and yeah, that's a good question.
That's all right. Well, and this is all fairly recent, is it? Is it not? Or how long have you been working on this?
I would say 6, 7 years, maybe a couple more.
So it's not quite so recent, but a labor of love, I would think, right? As you discover new things about your ancestry?
Correct. Yeah, ever since that trip to Abiquiu, I started going back every about once a year, and I would stay there and visit and reconnect with the land and the people there. But I really feel close to the land and different sites there. I mean, just having had my ancestors live there and their presence, I can feel it. You know, it's very there's something very special about the land, and it still has this life that permeates through the rocks and the ground and the trees. And it's almost like being there, I could feel their footsteps and, you know, hear whispers of their voices in the tree leaves, and even, you know, past a couple hundred years, you know, the Native American, the Pueblo people that we come from walked those same places and paths. And, you know, I would go for a walk and, you know, within 15 minutes or so, find something really incredible, like some petroglyphs that were just, you know, mind-blowing how close and present and alive it all felt.
Right. Well, and I know there's a lot of folks I think that feel that way about even different parts of New Mexico, right? That connection to the land and being able to really have a feeling, a sense of the people that were there before, especially when they are related to you. What further work do you want to do in this regard? Is there still more questions that you need answers for?
I am definitely curious about the artifacts and the studies, more details that are surrounding Las Casitas. I think there were some people that contributed to the study that was done from El Rito, and you know, it's a light study, I guess. I mean, it seems like it was of interest to begin with, but then it kind of dropped off. I'm not really sure.
Right. Paul Reed, can you help with that a little bit about maybe some of the information that we know about Las Casitas, and is it changing with as far as work?
Well, I think the interpretation definitely will change. You know, there a lot of times, and we've talked about this some, Scott, we have, unfortunately, in archaeology, this sort of large legacy of unfinished projects. So there's interest that comes about, people will do some work, and you know, sometimes of course this relates to, you know, construction projects and other things. But even in the realm of pure research, which I think this falls into, people get interested, they do a certain amount of work, and then something else calls their attention and they move on. So I think that's what happened here. Again, going back to the work of a guy named Herbert Dick in 1959 at the site, and then records being placed, and then David Snow coming along and getting interested and doing some work, and then getting himself pulled off into other things. So it's I think we really do have a good opportunity here, though, to sort of bring the promise of that work into the present, and then to really write a much more interested and interesting and comprehensive narrative about this amazing place on the landscape. I also wanted to say that, you know, listening to Astara talk about connections to land and getting out and really feeling that's for me been one of the huge benefits of the work that I've done with different Pueblo tribes and other groups over the last about dozen years now, is going back to ancestral places. And, you know, for people connected to these sites who are the descendants of the builders, these places are not empty, they're not abandoned, you know, they haven't been left behind in the ways that I think non-Indigenous people imagine. So the places are still alive, ancestors are there. They've left a lot of clues for their descendants to follow to help understand, what life was like in these different places. And so I think there's a pretty unbroken line of continuity as we go from present back into the past. And again, for me, as a non-Indigenous archaeologist who is going through a transformation myself to really hopefully better do this really important work that, I've been doing for a few decades. This has just been a real amazing process for me. And to see those connections emerge as, I'm in the field with different groups, and including the trip of the star to Las Casitas. So I think there's a lot more to come out of this, hopefully.
Right. And when you look at some of that earlier work, Paul Reed, from Las Casitas, work that has been, I guess, there for maybe what, 70 years ago? Is that when it was kind of being worked on by other archaeologists? I mean, those records have to be somewhat helpful in, even if they're not completely accurate, but in adding to the field of knowledge that that we now are adding to it, and that Estara is adding to it with her work.
Right, exactly. And this really is what we would describe as ethno-archaeology or cultural work at its best, where we have the stories from oral history and connections by, living descendants like Estara, and then the archaeological side of it, and putting that together into really, ideally, the most complete narrative or story that can be told.
And I guess then the question would be, there are probably, like Estara, there are probably lots of other stories out there, perhaps, right, from other surviving ancestors that maybe would start looking into their family history, their ancestry, to help add to the archaeological narrative about some of these places in our region, in our state.
Right, absolutely. And we this goes by different names, but this is really, in my view, sort of the best description is a social history, like a complete social and cultural history of these really important places on our New Mexico landscapes. And again, archaeology tells a certain part of a story, but it isn't getting to all of the narrative there. So it's as I say every time, I think, Scott, this is a very exciting time to be doing this kind of cultural work, because we are really greatly expanding how we conceive of it, and involving descendant communities in this very important work on their ancestral site. So it's great.
Right. Istara, I'm going to come back to you with a question about the work that you have done and maybe the attention it's bringing to you and your ancestors and maybe their culture, which hasn't always been well told. Do you hope that there's a better understanding of your ancestors and the culture in these areas that you are writing about, that you are discovering when you come back to New Mexico to visit?
Absolutely. My search initially was primarily motivated by the desire for discovering what our Native American roots were. And I know that this is a big point of interest for a lot of Janiceros and people that are wanting to discover more of their roots. And what I've discovered, and what I think that many Janiceros are discovering, is that it really isn't necessarily going to reveal what our tribal affiliation was. That's part of the definition of being a Janicero, is that we're detribalized, and there isn't necessarily that connection that is specific to a particular pueblo or tribe. And what I've found is that reconnecting to the land and to the people, where my ancestors came from, there's a story that is coming out in just the experience of it, and knowing where they traveled and where they settled, where they lived, where they migrated, when they left, and why they left, and trying to fill in pieces of that puzzle through the research and through being at these sites and visiting, like, the village of Abiquiu, which is still very alive and current, and talking with the people there, visiting the library. It all helps to bring a picture together that's more complete when we don't really have the connection to know, you know, where we came from or why it is that we're so drawn to discovering this part of our roots.
Right. And so it sounds like you may have some more work that you'd like to do regarding this and regarding your family and this part of New Mexico.
I'm open to the possibilities for learning more about La Casitas and its significance to the community and the area. And I'm not sure what that work would look like at this point, because like I said, I've been on this for some years.
Right. Paul Reed, what would you say about how to take the work that Astara has done to share that with the broader public? I know we have a blog post again, but is there more that you would like to do with some of this new knowledge, or as you look into it further, you and your colleagues, to try to interpret kind of what she has discovered?
Well, I think, again, if we're gonna do this right with our new approach, it really has to be driven by Astara and the folks in the community there at Abiquiu and others who might have those ancestral connections to Las Casitas. So, you know, if I think in the old days it would be some kind of outside deal, sort of what happened when the site was excavated in the late 1950s, which, you know, we don't know, may or may not have involved even consent from folks in that community. So I think there is great potential here. And again, I think, you know, having a real community focus to this would be the way to make that happen.
Right. And I would think there aren't a lot of these folks that are around, or have some folks maybe lost track of some of their family members or things like that. Is it kind of widely dispersed population, or what do we know about this group? It's what can you tell me, Astara? What do you know about the group of people that you are that are your ancestors, and where are they these days? Are they really widely distributed around the country, or what do we know?
Well, I feel like many people have lost their connections, and many people from this area in particular have lost their connections to their roots and their ancestry. And that really connects to the collective cultural trauma that people experienced by, you know, losing their homeland and fighting these wars and protecting themselves, dealing with things like droughts and, you know, circumstances specific to the land. And there are people that are dispersed all around. There's a wide network of family actually that come from this area, and more seem to be interested in discovering how we're all connected and what tore the families apart, what dispersed people, what dispersed the families. So what, you know, every story, every person's story, every journey adds to each other's stories.
Very true. And I would say that your work, I think, has maybe helped to present some of these links for others who may not know that maybe they were connected to this area. Is that what you hope that some of your work has done, to maybe for folks who maybe their family history is a bit unclear, that maybe they can do a little digging and maybe find a connection to this work that you are sharing with the world these days?
Definitely. Yes.
Very good. Paul Reed, does this help maybe for some other folks as well to kind of fill in the blanks a little bit about some other peoples that may not know, that they knew they came from this particular area, but no really direct information? Does that help with their story as well?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think Astara really brought up one of the critical parts of this is groups who've suffered trauma and the effects of colonization over centuries need to go through a healing process. And that's something that comes from within the communities. And so I think reconnecting to places and understanding the names of ancestors who lived in these places really can help in that healing process. The other project I was just going to mention briefly is Astara was involved in a DNA project for folks as well. And I think that has really helped, you know, discover some of the linkages amongst the modern people who are living in the area. So that, you know, we've talked about this before, Scott, is, you know, if we're going to do cultural work in the most comprehensive way, we want some archaeological data, you know, obtained ethically and with consent, historical narrative, oral history, and then, you know, with the DNA data and studies coming on for a couple of decades, this really helps sort of build this more comprehensive picture of what's going on. But, you know, it is a very complicated story. And as Astara said, people are scattered. There are core families in Abiquiu who still have deep roots to these places. And, you know, and some of those stories are beginning to be told. In a recent film by Gary Medina Cook, that's the title is escaping me, unfortunately, but Astara probably knows it. But that has helped really tell the story again of Hanisero people with a focus on Abiquiu and some other places in New Mexico.
Right. Well, that's great. And again, you know, it's great to hear the story from the people that that really need to tell it and not be interpreted by a different culture or different group. So it's really wonderful that Astara is being able to do that. And Astara, I really appreciate you being here on this program to talk about it in your own words and share your experiences. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You bet. It's been great talking with you. Paul Reed, thank you for, again, being on the program and bringing Astara to our audiences to share her story.
Yeah, my pleasure, Scott. There's, you know, again, this is such important work, and I'm thrilled to just have a little tiny role in it.
Well, it's maybe not so tiny, but I appreciate both of you for being with me this morning. Thank you both very, very much. My guest this morning, right here on KSJE.
Thanks. Positive Realty, your locally owned, full-service real estate brokerage, proudly serving buyers and sellers throughout San Juan County. Owner Realtor Matt Albright is ready to answer your real estate questions in an ever-changing market, offering his experience, market knowledge, and relaxed professional approach to every transaction. Positive Realty, making real estate goals a reality, always working on behalf of their clients' best interests. More information at 505-787-7121 or online at positiverealtynm.com.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.